Hello.
Oh shoot, I didn't plug my headphones in. Hold on.
La 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 la.
Hello?
Wait for Kathy and her headphones.
Hello?
Welcome to Stargazing, a Stargate gazing podcast. I'm your host, Mary.
And I'm your other host, Kathy.
And each week we review an episode of Stargate alternating between SG-1 and Atlantis.
Hello.
Hello. How's it going?
Okay, how are you?
Okay. Just out of sorts.
That wasn't convincing.
I'm okay. Just an annoying day, so that's fine.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. It was our circulation system was down for like half the day, and then people never returned their stuff on time, causing other people not be able to get their stuff, and I was just having like I'm at my wit's end sort of moment towards the end of the day.
That's annoying.
And then I just realized I left the fuzzy hat for the microphone in the living room. And I'm not going to get it today. Sorry, Jeff.
That's fair. That's fair. I had a decent day, but my allergies are like, hey.
Yeah.
More specifically, my white blood cells are like, hey.
Yay.
Remember the several hours we spent outside today? I'm like, yes, white blood cells. I remember that. And they're all, so do we. Here's some histamine.
Yay. Thanks, body.
So, face is feeling a bit windburned and my eyes hurt from allergies and my sinuses are very angry. But aside from that, it was a good day. I had a nice long run and went mini golfing with my sister and her kids.
Oh, fun.
So, it was a good
day.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah.
I worked. Yay.
That is lame. Could have done some work. It's technically a holiday for us, though, and it just didn't want to also, though, so.
Fair.
This being a day of observance.
Indeed.
As it is.
Yes.
Which is what they've decided to call it where I work.
Oh, like, okay.
I will observe nothingness today. That sounds good.
We still call it Good Friday.
Yeah.
On the calendar.
Yeah.
The official.
This is the first year that I remember seeing them refer to it as that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. This is thrilling.
It is extremely thrilling. Oh, I should probably get my notes.
Yeah, what do you need notes for?
Yeah. Any plans for the weekend?
I have to go on Sunday to meet a coworker to meet their cat.
Over here, the pile of rocks waving at you. Here. Yeah, I'm actually a thing. I'm a being. Allow me to introduce myself.
Who I will be cat sitting for a week.
Ah.
Yes. Kitty's name is Stella.
Aww.
Yeah.
Cat sitting at your house or just like visiting the cat at its house?
Visiting the cat at its house.
At their house.
Yeah. Yeah. They said I only need to go once a day. I was like, okay. I'm like, oh, can I hang around and pet the kitty though? Hopefully the kitty likes me. We'll see.
Indeed. How could it not?
Yeah. And then Shady could be like, you smell like something else. I'm going to be mad at you for no reason.
Could be.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's my thrilling Sunday. Earlier this week, my older brother sent a text to me and my younger brother asking if we wanted to come up to them on Saturday for dinner because my nephew was also going to go home for dinner. But my younger brother is working until 7. And then I just didn't respond because I'm a monster. So I guess I'm not doing that. But also I don't want to drive my car up there because my car is very old and I don't think it'll make it there and back without some service.
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah, I haven't had it serviced in a while, so I'm not confident in its abilities. But I'm going to run this bitch into the ground.
We have a bunch of family meals planned. We have some time with Jeff's family and my mom tomorrow, and then my sister and her family and whoever else she's invited on Sunday. So it will be a busy weekend.
Yeah.
With a lot of food.
I did buy a printer.
Oh, why?
Because I want to start making and printing my own greeting cards instead of buying them because I can't always find the ones that I would want. So I'll just make them myself, I decided.
Fair.
Like, isn't...
I suppose that makes sense.
I couldn't find anywhere online that specializes in mooshing multiple holidays and your birthday together because you're a terrible aunt who has not wished their nephew Merry Christmas, Happy Easter, or next week, Happy Birthday, although I still have the chance of doing that. So I needed a Happy Birthistmas card, and that does not exist.
Fair.
But it does now.
Fair. I also feel like a bit of a bad aunt because we generally don't really do much to celebrate the birthdays for the kids on Jeff's side of the family. But in our defense, we're not ever invited to celebrate their birthdays either.
Yeah. And
when we wish them happy birthday by text message, which is our one method of communication with those kids, we never hear back from them. So, yeah, it's weird. Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to make him a card and then I'm going to send him the card. I could go deliver it in person tomorrow, but I'm not because I'm a bad sister as well as a bad aunt.
Fair. Yeah. Being a good family member is overrated. It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. I am not good with the interpersonal relationships, particularly with
my
family.
I'm not either. I'm definitely not. I appreciate when other people put work into it because it's not that I don't care. It's just that it's not how my brain works. I don't think to send emails or letters or call people that I haven't talked to in a while. So I'm always happy to hear from someone I haven't talked to in a while, but I am not likely to think to text someone I haven't heard from in a while or email them or call them or anything.
This is why we're good friends.
Yes. This is why this works.
Yes. Just every once in a while, we have to sometimes like make sure Colin's not dead. But otherwise, you know.
This is true.
Whenever.
Yeah. Well, Jeff and I are seeing him once a week at game night.
Fair.
That is on the night that you can't go to because of your rehearsals.
Oh, son of a bitch. I could have gone last night.
You could have gone this week. I realized as we were there, I was like, where the fuck is Kathy? I know she's not at rehearsal tonight.
Joe, do you know where I was? I was at Costco dropping $450.
Yikes.
Grocery shopping. Woo.
I love Costco.
I know.
But I don't know that I've ever spent that much there, even when we were preparing for Thanksgiving.
It's my, I'm only going to be here once every like 2 to 3 months kind of thing.
Oh, so, fair. Like, yeah. I'm there like once a week. So.
And I definitely this time, because I've been running through small boxes of pancake mix regularly, I'm like, I'm getting the giant bag of pancake mix.
That's fair.
It's happening. And then I always overbuy prepared food and then try to eat my way through it because I really like their prepared food. And we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, they have good stuff.
And then I bought dip because that dip was so good when we had it on vacation. And
Oh my God. Mm. You know, this is all I eat. Dips for dinner. I bet I have not had a regular entree for years.
It was, right?
Yeah.
Buffalo chicken dip from Costco.
Yeah.
Highly recommend. A++.
Yeah. So I'm sure I overbought.
Would stuff my face again.
Yeah. did stuff in my face right before this, in fact. When I was at Costco yesterday, I was near the dip section. Keep looking for it, but I was being annoyed because there were people in front of me blocking with their giant shopping carts any access.
I just yell at them until they get out of my way.
Yeah.
I try to be polite about it, but I don't have patience for that.
But then finally, the woman who was in front of me moved, so I slipped over and then zipped in front of the woman who was to the right of us and snagged it. And I was like, sorry, I just need to get this. And she's like, oh, no, I understand that dip is the best. And I was like, oh. And then she said she couldn't find the dip she was looking for, but that's just the way things went. And then she told me that that dip is very good heated, which I had not tried. So I
hadn't thought of that, but
I might have to try that.
It's delicious. Yeah.
Yeah. Haven't done that yet. And then I met her again near the cereal and she was like, at least they have my cereal. And I was like, you are very friendly for a Costco person.
I try not to talk to anybody when I go anywhere in public, but especially at Costco.
I mean, I passed her again. She was having a conversation with a different person. So she's clearly like a social outgoing person.
I don't understand that. I don't understand that at all.
No. No. Good for her.
Yep.
But anyway.
This has been a very long intro.
Yeah.
You know what else was oddly longer than it probably should have been?
The montages?
Yes, actually, specifically the montages of this episode was where I was going with that.
Was it one really long one or were there more than one? I can't even... Oh,
I think it was just... Yeah, it was just one oddly long one.
So long.
Very, just a weird montage.
Yes.
Yeah. So what is this episode with the oddly long montage in the middle?
This was Stargate Atlantis, Season 1, Episode 7, Poisoning the Well. Before we start, though, what's with the earpieces they use in this show?
Yeah, you know, I was noticing that this episode, too. I don't know if it's just that they were more prominent this episode, or I just happened to notice them this episode, but they did all have an earpiece.
With that, like, weird little tiny spiky microphone.
Yeah, it wasn't the same kind of earpiece like with the coily wire like SG-1 would always wear. It was like the pop star tiny microphone kind of headset. I don't know.
I guess that cuts down on needing to use a walkie-talkie? I don't know.
I guess. Yeah. Or the radio that they're frequently wearing on their shoulder.
Radio. That's the word, walkie-talkie. Yeah. That's a childish way of saying that. Kind of.
It's I feel walkie-talkie. Still commonly used.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is it called a walkie-talkie?
Because you can walk and talk to somebody that is not
I there suppose.
At the same time. And we didn't have cell phones yet, so.
I mean, you could walk and talk with your friends and you're walkie-talkieing even without a walkie-talkie, but anyway.
This is true.
Walkie-talkie? How did that slip through the system? It's a general talking to some guy? What do you have there, soldier? Well, it's a new communication device. It's untethered, which will enable the troops to speak effectively when they're in the field. What's it called? Walkie-talkie! Look, I'm walking and I'm talking!
These are random thoughts that have nothing to do with the episode.
Nope.
We're on a city, a different city than Atlantis. Did I say on a city? We're in.
You did. I was going to comment on that and then decided to let it go.
We're in a city, a different one than Atlantis. It seems to be a little old-timier. What do we think? Like 1920s-ish?
Yeah, like early 1900s-ish. Yeah. 20s, 30s, yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of aesthetic.
Yeah. The Atlantis team is visiting this place. The people are called Hoffen. I don't know if that's the name of their city or anything, but...
Many Bothans died to bring us this information.
Yeah, I don't think that they ever actually said the name.
Yeah. These folks are giving them a tour of their home and their inner workings. And in this case, they are talking about power generation and how reliable power generation is their greatest concern, or one of them anyway. And they are hoping to use some geothermal energy pretty soon. Rodney is not impressed with their technology and is like, how could you possibly use this? Was the gist of it, to wield the power of geothermal energy.
Because they haven't developed the same kind of technology that we have on Earth. And so for them, it's pretty advanced. That's how they could think it was good.
The man who is showing them around, Druin, tells them that since the last time... Drew? What? Druin?
I said, sure.
Are you okay?
Yeah, sure.
Yes, sir?
Yes, sir.
Now, did you say yes, sir?
I think he said, yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah. Druin. Yeah. Druin is telling them that since the last time the Wraith were there, they have been working very hard to rebuild. Tayla is wondering why they're doing that. Aren't they concerned that the Wraith will come back, especially if they become more advanced? But Druin's like, we are a hopeful people who are going to continue to live our best life and not let the Wraith get in the way of that. If they give up, if they try not to attract the attention of the Wraith, whatever... It's victory for the Wraith. He says, though, that they are also working on a defense, which is when Shepard's finally like, oh, I'm interested in something that's going on here. And he's like, you didn't tell us this for 2 whole days that we've been here? And Druin's like, I literally just met you, dude. Chill.
He says that he had to learn that they could be trusted, but, like, that only takes you 2 days?
Yeah. People in this galaxy...
I would think it should take more than just 2 days.
People are very trusting of this Atlantis group.
They really are, I'll be so. And they shouldn't be. Not that they're not trustworthy, but they shouldn't be that trusting of anybody that they have just met.
No.
In this universe full of creepy Wraith and who knows what else.
Yes.
Or galaxy, I suppose.
Too trusting.
Indeed.
They're interested in this weapon, some kind of defense weapon, he says, and that they're hoping it will protect them from the next Wraith culling, which, based on historical facts they have, probably won't happen for at least another 50 years, which the Atlantis team is sort of like,
doesn't seem, yeah. Okay, 50 years, you say?
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like it's probably very accurate of an assumption.
Right.
Druin leads them towards the weapon he's going to show them. Well, McKay and Shepard have a chat about how they haven't told them the Wraith are awake. It's just Shepard and McKay having a little argument about why didn't you tell him? No, why don't you tell him? guys, come on. Then they arrive at a different place, some sort of lab.
Secret lab.
Rodney says it reminds you of Area 51.
Circa 1918,
adds Shepard.
Shepard.
Druin grabs a test tube full of brownish red goo or something and is like, oh, you're going to find this intriguing. And we're hoping it's going to make us completely immune to the Wraith. Credits.
Actual credits, too, with glamour shots and clips and everything.
Indeed.
Yeah. After credits, we're back on Atlantis in the briefing room with the team and Dr. Weir. They're telling her about what's going on the planet. McKay says with the current level of technology on the planet, it's essentially going to take them forever to actually finish developing this cure that they say they have. Their attempts to make a cure involve playing with some sort of a protein that prevents the Wraith from being able to feed on humans. Their best guess is that it'll take about 50 years more. And of course, the people on Atlantis want that to happen much faster than that. McKay says that Shepard has already offered to help the Hoffans, which Weir was a little bit surprised at since he had not run that by her first. Shepard says that Beckett has volunteered to help, which Beckett actually hasn't done yet because he hasn't told Beckett yet either. So
great.
Yeah. Long story short, of course, they're going to go bring Dr. Beckett with them and try to help them make this immunization a little bit faster than 50 years.
In the next scene, Dr. Beckett has found out he's been pressed into service, as I think he calls it at some point.
Yeah, yep. He's not thrilled.
He is unhappy that he has been volunteered for this rather than being asked. And he's also like, I'm not military. Shepard's like, yeah, I know, I can't give you orders. And Rodney's like, no, actually, he just doesn't want to go through the Stargate. Because converting a human body into energy and sending it million light years away through a wormhole is bloody insanity, he says.
One of them is refusing to step into the transporter.
Oh, I'll see to it that he beams up.
I appreciate that they said that Dr. Beckett is playing Dr. McCoy, but yeah, in real life. And then had to explain Star Trek to Taylor.
Yes.
They didn't go into as much detail as I would have liked, but you know,
yeah,
I still appreciated the reference.
Agreed. And then Rodney is trying to be encouraging and be like, how often do you get to travel to an alien planet? And Beckett's like, I'm on one. It was a silly, funny scene.
It was. I agree. It amused me. In the Hoffman lab, everybody is there, including somebody named Perna. Have we met her before this scene?
No.
I don't think so. Yeah. Perna is, I guess she's the lab director, head person,
yeah,
chief scientist. Chief scientist is what she actually addresses herself as. Okay. She's the chief scientist for this lab. It has hundreds of years of medical knowledge.
She also says project.
Oh, does she? I didn't even notice that. That's weird.
That's her weird. That's her main characteristic, I'd say.
Yeah.
Her main personality trait is she says project.
Saying project. Fair. I like it. Yeah. Beckett seems as though he probably has a bit of a crush on her already. She's an attractive lady. So they have their introductions, and I'm sure he's pretty happy that he's going to be working pretty closely with her until they are able to figure out. It's not really a cure so much as an inoculation.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Shepard, McKay, and Taylor have dropped off Dr. Beckett, so I guess it's not really so much meanwhile as later. And they're with Druin again. He's taking them on a tour of their underground repositories of knowledge. So whenever the Wraith think that a civilization is becoming too advanced, they'll come and cull everybody so that they can't ever develop too much technology or too much of a way of fighting back.
This sounds like someone we've met.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It really does sound quite familiar. Can't quite put my finger on
somebody who doesn't like humans to advance their civilization and technology.
Yeah.
It's
can't put my finger on it.
No.
Nope. It's gone.
Nope.
Ghoul.
So they have these huge archives that are hidden under the city, and because it's like 1920s-ish technology, of course everything is in giant books, no computers or anything like that.
Fuck yeah, books!
I like books.
Me too.
They have, I think they said about 150 years worth of the knowledge of their ancestors in this place, even though several cullings have happened within the course of that 150 years of collected knowledge that they have here. And because of this knowledge, it's what's enabling them to develop more and more technology. So they do seem a little bit more advanced technologically, not any other meaning of that term, than the various villages that we've seen where they're kind of more hunter-gatherer types of societies or more agricultural types of societies. These people actually have a city and are a little bit more like post-industrial revolution kind of technology versus all of the other societies that we've seen that were more pre-industrial.
Yeah.
Kayla asks what happens if the Wraith just decide to wipe them out of existence entirely and says that they're going to be helpless because even if they have all of this knowledge, if there's nobody left to use it, then that's not really going to do them a whole lot of good. Basically, Druin's only response is that they just have to try to do their best to not let that happen.
Yeah. In the lab, Perna is introducing Beckett to one of her predecessors, a scientist named Farrell Mylan, who was the one who was working on this protein the last time they were trying to develop it. He kept meticulous journals of what he was working on. One of the things he documents is that there is a man who survived a Wraith encounter, and they have learned that the man possessed a unique protein. And that is what allowed him to resist. Apparently, the Wraith release a chemical when they touch their hand to your chest to suck you dry of your life. Somehow, this scientist finally was able to make a copy of that particular protein they found in this one guy.
I thought that was a pretty interesting take on that. I mean, it kind of makes sense. Not that it really, you know, makes sense that there is a species draining life force, but many other species of creature that feed on other animals by drinking their blood or something will release different chemical proteins and blood thinners and stuff like that to assist in the feeding process. So I thought it was interesting that they decided to add that in there with the Wraith doing something kind of similar to things we've actually seen with kind of parasitic species.
True, true. And with this protein, he was able to create, she says, a prototype of a drug that would interfere with the Wraith feeding process. But before they could test it, the scientist was killed, and she has been tasked with continuing his work. Dr. Beckett asks how she knows that Farrell wasn't just making shit up in his journal.
A valid question. Yes. Plenty of people do that. Wakefield. Sorry, I had to those allergies.
I don't know. That was quite the cough.
Yeah.
Or sneeze. Very W-E sounding.
Yeah.
Perna is like, oh no, though. They worked and worked until the very last moment. They were guarded right up until the end, until the Wraith killed them all. So obviously, they were so invested in this and so hoping it would work that they were willing to sacrifice themselves in order to hope that the next generation would thrive. His last words in his journal are very famous. She's certain that he's not some, like, crank who's making shit up. But she also says it's not just his journals, but the research material he had was also preserved. And they even have Wraith cell samples, which they're still using for their continuation of this work. And so she shows him to a microscope and he looks in it. We don't get to see what's in it.
I wish we did.
Because we're not that cool. We don't get to see a Wraith cell. Only Beckett and Perna get to look through microscopes nonstop through this whole episode.
Yeah.
We get nothing.
I thought it was weird. They're talking about using 150-year-old Wraith cells, and I know that these cells are presumably resistant and long-lived because the Wraith are long-lived, but are they not trying to culture them to make more, though? Do they just have the original cells that they harvested? I thought that was weird.
I don't get it.
You uncultured swine!
That they're talking about it, what sounds like the original cells, and there's no mention of trying to reproduce them in any way that we do with HeLa cells.
Yeah.
Which,
that's just what I was thinking about.
HeLa cells, the strain is from like 75 years ago. And, you know, that's a whole other issue because they were essentially like stolen from Henrietta Lacks without her permission, and her family was never given any restitution or anything. And that's a whole big messy thing. Yep. But those cells have saved a lot of lives because of all the research that they've been used for. But anyway, it's not the same cells, though, that have been used for these 75 years. It's a cultural line that they just keep using to make new cells with. Yep. And I was like, why would they be using 150-year-old cells instead of like actually trying to make new cells and continue to propagate that line of cells?
It's not clear. No. Nope. Why would it's not. Do that?
Yeah. Beckett makes his way back to Atlantis and he talks to Dr. Weir about the ancient cells in a petri dish. Beckett says he took the liberty of running some tests of his own using those very old cells. Their results were pretty impressive, near complete resistance. I don't know exactly what that means, but that's all he says. So resistance to what? Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't really seem to make sense because they're trying to make human cells resistant to the race. Yeah. So I don't really know how that works, but whatever. Okay. Long story short, though, they want to try to get some less old cells. So they take us to their version of prison where the Wraith that they captured a couple episodes ago or so has been hanging out since they brought him in. Apparently, Shepard's been going down there periodically to try to question him and not actually getting anywhere with it. He does mention that they've been talking to each other for so long and he doesn't even know the guy's name. And when the Wraith doesn't tell him his name, Shepard says that he's just going to call him Steve. I believe I have mentioned before on this episode that I've never known a Steve that I like, except that I'm sure we have listeners named Steve who are delightful people, but... If we're talking somebody like my thesis advisor, then this is an appropriate name for that Wraith, because that Wraith is surely a garbage person, just like my advisor was.
Wasn't one of the Irish guys that we went on Fraser Island with named Steve? He seemed okay.
Was he?
I think
okay,
so.
Okay, those guys were cool.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. That's another example of a nice Steve. I think last time I was griping about Steve's, I did mention I used to have a coworker named Steven. I liked him. He was nice. Yeah. I don't think I've actually even ever had any students named Steve. It's not a very common of a name.
My uncle's name was Steve.
In the youths these days. Your uncle.
I forgot about him.
That guy. All right, him.
Yeah. I don't think you ever met him. Maybe you did. I don't know.
I think I have, actually.
It's been a long time ago.
It was, a very long time ago in Cape Cod.
Oh, God. Wait, that might have been a different uncle then, because I don't think this was my father's brother.
Oh, okay. Then no, I have not. I'm thinking of, I think, someone that was married to your mom's sister.
Oh, Uncle Dennis.
I think that's who I'm thinking of.
I'm going to name my whole family, and you guys are going to be able to figure out who I am if you haven't already. Yeah.
Revealing private information of users is called doxing. In some ways, it is productive, though mostly it is used by harassers and blackmailers.
Yeah, and I'm sure everyone is very excited about this conversation about your extended family that we're having.
about my deceased uncle,
and
Steve.
And about Steve.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, if your name is Steve, thanks for listening, and thanks for not being an asshole. Thanks for disproving my hypothesis that Steve's suck, because I'm sure that you don't suck. So anyway, moving on. The conversation doesn't really seem to progress too far. Steve obviously hasn't eaten anything in a while, and so Shepard is kind of seeming to indicate that maybe if Steve starts giving them some answers, they might try to find a meal for Steve. And that's pretty much it.
Steve is skeptical.
Indeed. Understandably so.
In the briefing room, Beckett is talking to Rodney and Shepard and Weir and Tayla about using some living Wraith cells to keep testing. So continuing on from what he brought up with Dr. Weir, Beckett seems to think it's possible if they have fresher samples that they will eventually develop this inoculation. That's what you called it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rodney says the Hoffins are practically obsessed, so yeah, that's totally gonna work. And Taylor's like, yes, but their obsession may be their undoing.
Your faith in your friends is yours.
Rodney's like, well, still could be good for us, even if that happens. Always look on the bright side, guys. Let's take what we can from everyone we meet.
Yay!
Taylor's concerned that even if the drug works, that will mean disaster for somebody who maybe wouldn't have been killed, but now the Wraith are ignoring the Hoffins and going somewhere else. The drug would only be valuable if everyone everywhere had it. That's an idea, but they're clearly not anywhere near that yet. Shepard reports that the prisoner blinked, that he may break soon, is what he meant. By blinking.
Yeah.
According to Rodney.
I don't understand how that worked, but whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I think he was just using a turn of phrase and Rodney is being weirdly literal about it.
Oh, I didn't understand it as a turn of phrase, so I was also being oddly literal about it.
You weirdo.
I was like, what the hell is he talking about?
Yeah, no, he just, yeah, it was, I think it's a turn of phrase. They make a plan to render Steve unconscious with his own weapons, or at least the weapons of his people, again, and then take a sample from him.
So that's what they do. They head down to the brig, they say hi to Steve, Ford says bye to Steve as he shoots him. Steve is knocked unconscious and they get his cells and leave. And then that's it. They go back to the lab.
Secret lab.
In the Hoffman City. Beckett hooks up some technology that he has, some microscopes that he brought from Earth and a display screen of some sort, computer I think he's got with him too. And they're going to get to work with their inoculations. Beckett says that he thinks the biggest problem that they've had with their testing is because the inoculation didn't have enough of a presence in human cells to be effective. So they need a better delivery system, whatever that delivery system is going to be. We never find that out, but that's what they're going to be working on. They want to first, though, start trying to recreate the key protein in the serum and then work their way backwards from there to try to figure out how to get it into the cells once they've figured out how to create the key protein in large quantities. Perna randomly notices that Beckett speaks differently than others. And then they talk about how beautiful Scotland is.
I just realized that blinking might be a staring contest reference.
Oh.
Like you lose your staring contest. I don't know. Anyway,
oh,
maybe.
Okay.
Probably not, though. But anyway. Then we get a lot of science montage.
The oddly long montage that we were referring to before.
Yeah.
It's mostly just Beckett and Perna staring down at a table, presumably with petri dishes on it.
And microscoping
as well. And that alternating between that and then Ford and Shepard staring at Steve. I didn't understand that at all.
It went on for so long.
It really did, and I did not understand why they kept just showing Ford and Shepard staring at Steve.
Don't know.
Yeah, so weird.
Like, it even goes on for so long that I thought we were done with it when she starts reading out of that guy's notebook, but yep. Then it just continues.
Then it kept going anyway. So weird.
It's a very long montage. They do lots of science.
Yes, they do.
Yep. And suddenly they got something as they look at another sample or something. And they're so excited. Druin comes to see them. They've obviously reported to him what they've done, which is apparently the result was 100% cellular penetration in all 5 test inoculations.
Sure. Worth pointing out that these inoculations were all just happening in a petri dish.
Yeah. Dr. Beckett is cautiously optimistic. He's like, we still got a lot of work to do, but this is promising. He and Perna pat each other on the back. And Druin's like, oh my god, thank you so much. We are ready for some testing, right? We can just start going on with this? And Perna's like, yep, a little bit later today. And Beckett's like, whoa, what? Slow down.
The data just doesn't justify this test. Now I'm asking you for the last time. We can't do this.
Don't be a coward. Risks are part of laboratory science.
Yeah, they do advance through this very quickly, and granted, this is a completely different planet, but they skip many steps that we do in this country when it comes to making new inoculations.
Yeah.
They skip a lot of important steps, which comes back to bite them in the ass later.
Yeah, I think that they don't come across in like a desperate in like a manic kind of way, but they definitely like come across as like desperately wanting to fix this issue with the Wraith in this civilization iteration.
Optimism to the point of foolhardiness.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
What they want to do now is test the effectiveness of the serum against Steve.
Mm-hmm. Beckett doesn't like that idea, and neither does Dr. Weir when they bring that to her. They know for sure that Steve is going to die, so they might as well make good use of him while he's alive, according to Shepard. Weir, of course, points out that that goes against the Geneva Convention, which It's debatable whether the Geneva Convention would apply to the Wraith and being out here, not anywhere near Earth, but I appreciate that she at least wants to consider the implications that it has for the Geneva Convention. Dr. Weir also rightfully points out that they don't have any idea what the long-term effect of the drug on humans could be, or even short-term effect, though, for that matter. Because, again, they have only looked at this inoculation in a petri dish, not even on any other animals or anything, just a petri dish. So the next course of action that is being proposed is to actually inject this into a human. Again, not, I don't love the idea of animal testing, but that would be the standard, is you do animal testing first to test for both safety and efficacy before you move on to humans. But they're going to skip over that and just put it into a human and then put that human into the room with Steve and see what happens.
Want to make an omelet? You got to break some eggs.
Weir is still really not comfortable with this situation. Shepard, though, says that he's spent a lot of time with this prisoner and has no pity for him whatsoever. And of course, Steve's going to die anyway because they can't really just give him people to feed on. This drug could be useful someday, so they might as well at least make Steve's death meaningful by trying this test. Beckett's not even really involved in this. It's actually just Dr. Weir and Shepard who are going back and forth about this, which seemed pretty odd to me.
Yeah.
Weir is rightfully concerned about what happens if the drug fails, the impact that it would have on the human. Obviously, if the drug fails, then the human's going to die. So they're going to try to get a terminally ill patient who has volunteered himself, according to Shepard. So it sounds like they've already actually got a volunteer at this point. Weir says these are not the types of decisions I was expecting to make on this expedition. What types of decisions were you expecting to make? There is absolutely no way to foresee the types of decisions you would need to make on this type of unprecedented journey, Dr. Weir. Yeah. I thought that was a weird comment. And then she tells Shepard to go ahead with the plan.
Shepard goes to see Steve to let him know they're going to take a field trip. And they're totally going to give him something to eat if he tells him anything of value. They put Steve in chains and then into a jumper and fly him to the planet through the Stargate, I'm assuming.
Presumably.
Yes. No, they dial the gate. Okay. And
don't know how else they'd get there.
Yeah. Oh, right. No, they totally do. I'm sorry. I just hadn't gotten there yet.
Yep.
But and for some reason, Steve is creepily smiling in the back of the jumper, which is freaking Ford out.
I also thought it was weird, in addition to Ford thinking it was weird. Yep. Ford and I were both like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? Why is he doing that?
They get to the planet. On the planet, Beckett and Perna are talking to a man who is dying. He has some kind of illness. We don't know what, just an illness. It's killing him. So he is willing to be their guinea pig. He has been told all the risks, according to Perna. Beckett is still concerned that this guy is not taking this seriously. He's like, you need to know, this has never worked on anything other than a petri dish. We don't know what's going to happen. And Meryl's like, the guy's name is Meryl. I should probably say that.
Yes.
And he's like, well, either way, it works out. Either it works and cool, or it doesn't work and you learn something for the next test. And my death will have meaning, so suck me dry, guys. Let's do this.
I did appreciate that at least they're going through the effort of informed consent with Meryl, even though they're obviously not doing that for Steve.
Yeah.
Who, as a conscious being, technically should be given the respect of informed consent. But no, of course they're not going to do that. But they did thoroughly inform Meryl of the process and the risks.
Yeah.
So that's good, at least. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Back in Hoffman City somewhere, Beckett and Perna have left Meryl wherever it is that he is, and they're just having a bit of a chat. Beckett is struggling with this a bit himself. He mentions the Hippocratic Oath and that it starts with first do no harm, and he feels like he's definitely got a strong potential of doing harm with this test. Perna recites some quote from the guy whose research their project has been based on. Essentially, the whole long line ended with, one last revelation before we take our dying breaths may prevent this terrible day from happening again. So They're both talking about how the words of the people that came before them are essentially sacred to them. Beckett says he appreciates where she's coming from with that, but that there's still just way too many unknowns for him to be comfortable with this, and they still don't really know any potential of side effects. Perna says they don't really have any time. I guess they've told them at this point that the Wraith are awake, which they hadn't done previously when the topic came up. Beckett's still just not sure that the ends justify the means, though, in this case. And that it's a very slippery slope. If you make an exception for one particular situation, then it can mean that there are way too many exceptions made later on down the road. Also, if this doesn't work, then poor Meryl's gonna have a pretty awful death, so that would suck as well.
Yeah. Ha ha ha, suck.
And Perna's like, well, there'll be someone else to take his place, which I thought was an oddly callous way to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Perna. At the cell where the Wraith is currently being kept, Halleck comes to tell Shepard and Ford that they are ready. Beckett and Meryl come in, and the Wraith is like, this is my dinner? Come on. Shepard, though, is like, you have to tell me something first or we're not doing this. How many Hive ships have become operational? And he says all of them. And not only that, they are going to use their regular old feeding grounds and get strong. And then they're going to come kill everybody in Atlantis. And Shepard's like, when's that going to be? But he doesn't answer. Beckett tells Meryl one more time he does not have to do this, but Meryl's like, it's cool. So he goes in and opens his shirt. And the Wraith is like, this dude is weak, but decides to try to feed on him anyway. But he can't, it turns out. And he removes his hand and is still hungry and sad.
Indeed.
And everyone's like, whoa, it works! Yeah!
Holy crap!
Crazy.
Yeah. In some room elsewhere in Hoffman City, Druin, Beckett, and Perna are celebrating with a champagne-like beverage. The results speak for themselves. Huzzah! It is everything that they hoped that it would be. And it's time to take this to the next level. Beckett is like, no, this is just one test. We need to do more tests. The results are great, but he wants to do a bunch of tests on Meryl himself before issuing his final report. Druin is like, sure, no problem. And they have a toast.
At the prison cell, Shepard and Taylor have been called because Steve does not look good, Ford reports. He is moaning and groaning and not looking well. And he has been that way since the test.
We could call them Team Farts.
Team Farts?
Ford, Rodney, Taylor, Shepard.
We could do it. Do we name the heroes of the show Team Farts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, there will be another character joining them, and his name also starts with R. So it can be F-R-R-T-S.
Although Ford will be gone.
Yeah.
Ertz.
All right. Guess that doesn't work. Anyway, moving on.
We can change it.
Completely change it random thought. Not yeah. That it's all I've been obsessing over here whenever you're talking.
It's fine. You don't need to listen to me anyway.
I don't.
The Wraith is like, what did you do to me? Shepard says they should get Beckett in there and that they're going to help you, he tells Steve. And Steve's like, don't pity me and you're going to get a lot worse than this. And then he dies. So that's unexpected.
Yeah. Not really.
No.
It's not what they were expecting.
Exactly. Next, we are in a lab where Beckett is about to start autopsying Steve.
Not an autopsy, different species.
I don't care. I'm going to call it an autopsy anyway. Alien autopsy. Autopsy.
Necropsy. Alien autopsies aren't autopsies either.
It's an autopsy.
Auto means
autopsy. Self. We're doing an autopsy on Steve the Wraith. Woohoo!
Kathy sucks.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, he hasn't started doing anything to Steve yet when Shepard comes in. I don't know why, because then Beckett's like, I'm going to do the thing. And Shepard's like, okay, I'm going to leave. But before that, Beckett's like, I did some tests already, so let me tell you what I learned. And he said that all of his vital organs shut down almost simultaneously.
Huh.
And it wasn't from starving to death.
Oops.
He said they found a significant amount of Hoffman serum in the Wraith's bloodstream. And that he'll probably find similar trace amounts in each of his organs when he analyzes those.
I don't understand why they were surprised that the serum could get into the Wraith's blood through this procedure, through which the Wraith would normally be sucking life force out of a person. Why are they surprised that something else could also end up in the Wraith body as a result?
Don't know, because they don't know anything about the Wraith.
Yeah.
Beckett thinks that the serum protein that they produced might have mutated when exposed to the Wraith chemical that goes into the human when they're about to start sucking life force, and it caused a toxic reaction, and it poisoned the Wraith. So it's a weapon.
Indeed. In some Hoffman conference room, Druin doesn't give two shits.
I've no more fucks to give. My fucks have run out dry.
He's pretty happy. He yeah. All he cares is that it worked. He doesn't care at all that it also results in the death of whatever Wraith was trying to feed on a human. If anything, he thinks that that actually makes the serum even better, that they're essentially killing two birds with one stone. They're protecting their people and also killing the Wraith at the same time. It's great as far as he's concerned. Kayla is concerned for their safety once the Wraith learn that they have a biological weapon, essentially, with this. She says that the Wraith are going to wipe out all of their people in retaliation for the death of any Wraiths that result from the serum that they have. But Druin is oddly optimistic, naively optimistic, when he says that he thinks that, nah, the Wraith will just leave us alone because we're unpalatable. It'll be fine. Shepard's like, yeah, because they're so easygoing and live and let live. It did seem like a very weird stance that Druin was taking.
Yeah.
But he's not interested in hearing any of their concerns. He's just happy that they have something that is going to protect his people, and if it kills the Wraith in the process, then that makes it even better. Shepard says that he appreciates how passionate that Druin is about all of this, but really they should be doing some extra testing and a bit more research into this before they start actually using it as an inoculation, but it's too late. They somehow have already managed to make a shit ton of this in a rapid amount of time. And they're already inoculating people with it, despite, again, the fact that they have only used it in petri dishes and one person, and they skipped the very important step of safety testing.
Having, in the recent past few years, gone through a period where people needed to mass produce vaccines in a very quick amount of time, this is absurdly fast.
Yes, these people do not have anywhere near the same level of technology for mass scale production of inoculations that we have now. Like, even 10 years ago, we probably wouldn't have been able to do what we did for COVID. So with their 1920s-ish technology, yeah, there's definitely not any way they'd have been able to do that.
But somehow they are.
But yes, they are. Maybe there's only like 100 people in their society. Who
Maybe.
Knows?
This all might be just to save 100 people. We don't know.
Yeah.
Back in the lab, Beckett is preparing to go. He has no reason to stay now because they're producing this and injecting people with it or whatever. He says there's more work to be done and maybe we could, you know, keep this as a defensive drug if we do more research. She tells him then that Merrill is dead. And they haven't figured out his cause of death. It seems pretty likely from the implication here that he died not because of his disease, but because of something about the inoculation. But Perna says they're not going to stop because it doesn't necessarily mean more will die. And she could not make anyone stop without proof anyway. As a last ditch, Becca is like, Perna, maybe you just sit this out then, you know. Because you're smart and you shouldn't be involved. And she's like, it's too late. I was like the first one in line. I have the thing. And that makes Beckett sad.
Indeed. Back in the place that Druin hangs out, he is meeting with Beckett and Perna and Shepard to talk about what happened with Merrill. Druin is still oddly unconcerned. He thinks that they shouldn't rush to any conclusions just because the one guy died. He says the Wraith could be on their way here right now, so they have no choice. They have to move forward. They have to keep inoculating people just in case the Wraith are already on their way. And he also says that all of the people are in complete agreement, so I'm not completely sure if they told the people that are getting inoculated that the one guy died. That was actually a little ambiguous as to whether or not that information was shared with them all.
Yeah.
Which is obviously not good. Shepard is very concerned that all of the people on this planet could be dead before the Wraith even get there, if the Wraith are on their way.
And he will be dead before dessert.
Beckett points out that it's not too late. Even though they've done a bunch of inoculations, there are still a bunch of people that have not been inoculated yet that they might be able to save. That's not to say that all of the people that have been inoculated are going to necessarily die, but it's very possible that they will, since they still don't know what killed Meryl. Perna, though, keeps pointing out that Meryl had a terminal illness anyway, so maybe the serum didn't actually have any part in his death, or maybe the serum only played a part in his death because of the fact that he was already terminally ill, and that if they put it in healthy people, that they'll still be fine. Beckett says that he had a sudden and complete respiratory breakdown, which doesn't actually really mean anything, and asks Druin if he wants to risk thousands of people's lives based on the assumption that it only spread through Meryl's body because he was sick. And then there's a call over the radio. It's Tayla. They are in the medical center and they need help because, holy shit, their actions have consequences, or rather the lack of actions, being safety testing, have consequences. And there are a whole bunch of sick people in the hospital now.
Yep. The rest of the team goes to see what's going on with Tayla, and Shepard goes to call for help. From Atlantis with this medical crisis, Beckett goes to work, and so does Perna. And unfortunately, people are already dying.
Yeah. Like, fast.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's not it, good. And it's, they can't breathe, which is horrifying.
Yeah.
And watching people not be able to breathe is the worst.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit of a triggering scene.
Yeah. Understandable. Yeah. Very understandable. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's just like, I just realized too, I blocked it out again. And then I was like, oh no, that happened.
No. Yeah. No, it sucked. There were people with nasal cannulas and they were just all struggling and it was bad.
Ugh. Anyway.
Back in Druin's lair, he's got a guard that is trying to keep Shepard from coming in now, but Shepard makes his way in anyway and starts yelling at Druin about what's happening out there. He says, half the people you gave that drug to are dying. And Druin's like, yeah. Half, which means we've got 50% of people surviving. Woo! It's cool. We're going to live.
3.6. Not great, not terrible.
Yikes. Just yikes.
I mean, glass half full, man.
Druin says the Wraith will know the full conviction of the Hoffen people if they're willing to kill half of their own people in order to prevent the Wraith from attacking and destroying the rest of them. And wouldn't it be great if they could spread the drug to every human in the galaxy in the future? You know, there would only be millions and millions of people that would be dying, Shepard points out. But Druin's is like, yeah, but it's the end of the Wraith, so that'd be great. And that's worth the bargain. So, again, just yikes, this guy.
Yeah. I mean, they were just such a sympathetic people, desperate, and then they had to make him totally horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And he tells Shepard, don't think I'm alone in this conviction. So, at least according to him, everybody on their planet would agree that the decision to let half of all humans die in order to stop the Wraith is a good decision. They're even holding a vote. Which Shepard rightfully asks, do they actually even know what they're voting on? Druin promises that they do, but we never find out exactly how the vote is worded, so who knows if they do or not, or if Druin is just like this odd psychopath, which he seems to be.
In the hospital, Beckett is continuing to bust his ass. More people from Atlantis have arrived to help him out, but just people are just dying left and right. It's terrible.
Yes.
He asks Taylor to do something, and she keeps trying to get his attention, but he's not really listening. But then she touches him on the arm and calls him Carson, and that snaps him too. And we find out that Perna is ill, and she is laying in a bed. She looks not good. She's got a cannula. She's clearly about to die because she's having it would have been nice to see Atlantis conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she says that she is at peace with what she's done, and you should be too. And Beckett is like, no, I'm full of all of the regrets. And she's like, but we have hope now. We fulfilled our forefather's destiny. He's crying, and she asks him to stay with her, and he does, and he doesn't have to stay very long because she just dies right then. It's depressing.
Quite.
Yeah.
Yeah. Elsewhere, Beckett, Ford, and McKay are wandering around. They are trying to make sure that Beckett's okay. He says that he is. Druin catches up with them and is surprised that they are leaving this lovely planet. He wanted them to know, though, before they leave, that the results of the vote are in. That was ridiculously fast. 96% are in favor with continuing the inoculations.
The entire population works in the factory where they're producing the inoculations, and they were able to just vote right there.
Yeah, so and also fast. We're probably all at gunpoint.
Yeah.
Because
jeez.
96% in favor, that is a ridiculous
bonkers
majority that you can't convince me would ever actually happen in real life anywhere.
Yeah.
Taylor asks if that vote included all of the people, and Druin says everyone. I wanted to know if it included the ones that were like on death's door that couldn't leave their bed. Were they going and asking all of them, hey, do you think that this is worth it? Because they might not have thought so.
What about children?
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
They don't get a say, do they?
Yeah, I didn't know. Like, yeah, what if they just lost both of their parents to this? Do they get a say? They said all of their people. So it seemed sketchy that they were not really all that forthcoming with information about what was the vote, how was it worded, exactly who was included. They promised everyone was, but were they really? We don't know. Druin says that the next time that they meet, whenever it is that the SG Atlantis team comes back, he wants to discuss the best way to disseminate the drug on as many worlds as possible. And Shepard's basically just like, no. That's not going to happen. Druin thinks that their upcoming victory will change Shepard's mind. But Shepard isn't convinced that they're going to be there if and when they ever return. Because even if they manage to survive individual Wraith attacks, they've already warned these people that the Wraith are just going to destroy everybody on their planet as a result of this to prevent that dissemination of that drug onto any other worlds. So Shepard wishes them luck and they wander off. Beckett says victory at all costs and asks if that sounds familiar to Major Shepard. Shepard recognizes that as being a quote from Churchill.
Victory. Victory at all costs.
And Beckett says he never thought he would disagree. That is the end of the episode. Did you like the episode?
Before we get to that, have you ever actually read The Hippocratic Oath? Because I just realized that literally the only thing I know about it is first do no harm.
I think I have a very long time ago. I actually don't remember the entire thing, but I'm pretty sure
if there's
I have.
A first, there must be a second. I don't know what it would be.
Let's see what the internet has to say. It's not very long, if I am thinking correctly. Hang on. That article is just about whether first do no harm is even possible.
Okay.
Why am I not just finding the text of it? I'm just finding, like, analyses of it.
Oath of Modern Hypocrisies from Penn State? I don't know. Oh, about the oath. Oh, this is a modern version of it, as it says. Okay, I'm fine. Well, that could be our homework assignment. Read the Hippocratic Oath.
The original one, translated from Greek, says, I swear by Apollo, healer, by Asclepius, by Hygieia, by Panacea, by all the gods and goddesses. Obviously, it's been updated since then. I can't find any reference on the modern day version of it.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, here it is. It's lengthier than I'm going to read now. Yeah, this all seems vaguely familiar. I think I read it a very long time ago. I've never had to take this oath because I'm pretty sure it's only doctors and not other medical professionals, but I certainly didn't ever take it as an EMT.
Gotcha. Yeah, it was just a passing thought. I'm like, I never even thought about it. It's like, whatever. That's the only thing that ever gets referenced, so at least in popular culture.
It's basically a promise that it's basically just a pledge that you're not going to be an asshole and treat your patients terribly and that you're going to be honest and have a good bedside manner is the gist that I'm getting from what I'm reading right now. And unfortunately, there are a lot of doctors that do not bother to stick with many of these tenets.
Tenets? Yeah.
Tenets.
This is nice, isn't it?
So did I like the episode? I kind of mixed.
Yes.
I liked Dr. Beckett in it a lot. I thought it was a good introduction, a better introduction to his character because we haven't seen him very much. Although I know he's not technically part of the main cast. He's around a lot. So.
Yeah. I mean, kind of like Dr. Frasier.
Yeah. Yeah. Was. And he's just a very empathetic doctor. And I liked him a lot. I was very sympathetic towards the Hoffins for most of this episode until they go batshit crazy at the end.
Yeah. I'm still not even convinced that most of that is all of the Hoffins so much as the one guy who I think was probably lying to people.
But unfortunately, there's nothing that the Atlantis team can do about that, which sucks. So I liked parts of it, and then parts of it were very upsetting, and I had a little bit of trouble with the team being so, I mean, they're angry for a number of reasons, right, at the end, because the Hoffins are, killing half their population and hoping to kill half of all humans everywhere, I guess, and then on top of that, taking this action is gonna upset the Wraith, which is not good for any human anywhere, but at the same time, I don't know, last episode they were about to steal technology from children and let them all die for a minute before they realized that was what they were doing. I don't know. I'm like, do you have all the moral high ground? I don't know. it was fine. I guess I'm falling on I mostly liked it. I was trying to keep a tally of what Weir will allow and what she won't allow. So she allows taking tissue samples from unwilling Wraith and experimenting on humans if they have consent. She won't allow stealing from children, though. Shepherd and Rodney, pro-stealing children. Anti-genocide.
Mm-hmm. Stealing children or stealing from children?
Stealing from children. I mean, although Rodney was like, we'll just take them all back to Atlantis, and that's sort of that's kidnapping, basically.
That's a form of abduction,
Taylor was anti-stealing from children and anti-genocide. So that's where everyone's, and I didn't count really Ford in that because he just sits around and says snarky things and laughs. I don't know. Anyway, true. Yeah. So that's the end of my part of that. How did you feel about the episode?
Fair. I actually did like it for the most part. I thought it was pretty interesting. I really like Dr. Beckett's character a lot, so I was excited that we actually got an episode where he was in it for a significant portion of the time. Like I mentioned earlier, I thought it was a pretty interesting premise to say that the Wraith must have, even though they don't understand the process of the life force sucking, that the Wraith have some kind of protein or something that they have to inject in their host to make it doable. And I thought it was also an interesting premise to try to use that protein to make some sort of an inoculation. I think that inoculations and vaccines are fantastic. So I'm a little bit hesitant about saying I really love an episode where they're making a vaccine look bad, or really it was more an inoculation, not exactly the same thing.
They didn't
make
them look bad. The people made themselves look bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, but it's actually not so much that they made that look bad as they skipped the very important step that we do in this country when we're making vaccines, which is safety testing. You test first to make sure that it is safe, and then second, you concern yourself with how effective is it. But safety is the first concern, and they completely skipped over that, which, again, different country, different planet even. So I don't expect them to necessarily have the same guidelines, but that's why this failed and ended up killing so many people, because you'd have to do safety testing, and that's really important part of the process that they did do. As rushed as our COVID vaccines may have been, they did the safety testing on them. Yeah. So those vaccines are safe. So I thought it was interesting. Not like super exciting or anything, but I did enjoy it for the most part because it was a little bit sciencey and not too outlandish or bad in the way of science. Just a little bit of skipping over some steps that you should be taking, but not necessarily just outright bad science.
Nice.
Yeah.
What are we going to do next? Will it have to do with science?
Probably. I think that's a fair bet. Let me see.
Also, I saw the thumbnail for the next Atlantis episode, and I was like, ooh. And then I was like, oh, we're not watching that yet.
Oh.
Colmini.
I was going to say, I saw Colmini, yeah. But I didn't see what, like, I was like switching between tabs. I was like, wait, where did I see that? And then I couldn't find it again.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Is he in it? Okay, that's exciting. Yeah. All right. Next is season 8, episode 8. Of Stargate SG-1, Covenant. When a billionaire industrialist threatens to reveal the existence of alien life at a press conference, SG-1 is charged with the job of keeping him quiet. Carter, who has worked with him in the past, tries to explain that the information will cause panic, but ultimately she must decide how far she is willing to go to stop this threat to national security.
Murder.
Yeah.
She's going to become an assassin.
I bet she does. Let's see what the TVDB says. It says, a businessman threatens to expose the secrets of alien life to the world, forcing Stargate Command to bring him into the loop. That is very different. Yes. And way simpler.
Yes.
Less ominous sounding.
True.
Less triggering of my hatred of billionaires.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I hope there are no billionaires named Steve listening to this. And if there are, sorry, but can I have some money?
If there are any billionaires named Steve listening to this and you want to get back at Mary, help me write my alien autopsy song. It's going to happen.
No. I'm
going to find something that rhymes with autopsy.
Necropsy?
No.
The proper
no.
term?
No. Alien autopsy. Alien autopsy.
Kathy's the worst. I'm gonna just hit stop before we even do
we
the names part.
Done
if you don't
our
stop
names
singing,
because we're too.
I'm gonna do it. Gonna do.
Thank you so much for listening to Stargazing with Kathy and Mary. This podcast is completely listener supported, and we couldn't do it without you. Show your support by telling everyone you know about how awesome this show is. Your reviews help a lot, especially on Apple Podcasts. You can find us at stargazing.space. Reach out to us via email at stargazing@gmail.com. Find us on social media at stargazing on Instagram, stargazing@mastodon.world. Get some merch at tinyurl.com/stargazing. And finally, show your financial support by joining us over at patreon.com/stargazing. Thank you for traveling through the gate with us. We'll catch you next time on Stargazing with Kathy and Mary.